Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
שלוש פעמים בשנה יראה חוזרך את פני השם אלוקיך במקום אשר יבחר ובני ירושלים ירקו.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Thinman. We've got a really good show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll be featuring an interview with Rabbi Shalom Friedman of the Ahmed Eish Memorial Museum. This is a brand new Holocaust Memorial Museum, which just opened up. It's in the process of opening up in Brooklyn. It's a bit of a different look on what a memorial should be. I thought, you know, worthy, you know, we should hear about this. The portion of the week is the portion of Akev, which can be found in chapter 7 of the book of Deuteronomy. We have some insights into that in the second half of the show. We've got wonderful music of an eclectic Jewish assortment throughout the show, closing with an awesome and dynamic Hasidic story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. A Chabad Chassid, that's a religious person, was stabbed in the stomach on Friday afternoon by a Muslim man in Strasbourg, France. Police arrested the stabber and believe the stabbing was an anti-Semitic attack. You don't say. The IDF arrested Hamas leader Hussein Mahmoud Abu Kawik, a member of the Palestinian Election Commission in Ramallah, and on an ongoing security activities which endangered regional security. That's what the IDF says. The move comes as the latest in an IDF crackdown on terror following mass arrests in Judea and Samaria. An Israeli scientist at Technion University has proven the existence of Hawking radiation. Ooh, what's that? Physicist Stephen Hawking, he's like, everybody knows about him, theorized that particles have to leave black holes. Black holes, they suck in, they have so much gravity, they suck in everything. But because of quantum mechanics, he says there has to be things that are actually leaving it. In order to simulate a black hole, you have to do that. I know lots of people who's brains are like that, but we're not going to go there. The scientists super-cooled helium to almost absolute zero, which is a negative 460 degrees Fahrenheit, then quickly heated the center to make a sound-blocking barrier, simulating the event horizon of a black hole. He then saw photons leaving the event horizon. And finally, Nefesh B'Nefesh celebrated its 50,000th immigrant brought to Israel since 2002. 233 North Americans made Aliyah this week, including 75 single young people who have signed up for IDF service. Go Nefesh B'Nefesh. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have Rabbi Shalom Friedman from the Ahmed Eish Memorial Museum in Brooklyn online. How are you today, Rabbi Friedman?
Hi, good morning. How are you doing, Rabbi Finman?
Good, thank God. We're doing very, very well. Okay, so it caught my eye. I'm not a Holocaust memorial person. I have to tell you that in 1975, the Germans released for that, at that time, that I believe the first file footage of what was going on inside the concentration camps. And being that I was in high school at that time, and it was something that we were up to and studying in history in World War II, so my teacher, who was of German descent, showed it to the class. And it was the first time I had been exposed to such things. And it was the classic film of the bulldozer bulldozing the bodies into the mass grave. And I picked myself up and I walked out and have basically not gone to Holocaust memorials since, because I know about it. I don't need it thrown in my face like that. And I don't like seeing it. It's not comfortable. And I understand it's not supposed to be comfortable. But I understand that the Ahmed Eish Museum's focus is not much on the atrocity so much, but on the survivors. Could you tell us about it, please, then, Rabbi Friedman?
Sure. So the Ahmed Eish Memorial Museum is a museum that is about the Holocaust, as you described. However, what we are doing is we're introducing to the narrative basically two things that have kind of been missing. Number one is that in the standard Holocaust narrative that you see in most of the museums, you don't really see much about the Orthodox community's experience during the Holocaust. And that is one thing that we are introducing to the narrative. It's an inclusion of, not an exclusion to, we're not exclusive to the Orthodox experience, but inclusive of that Orthodox experience. The second point is that we're taking a bit of a different perspective on the narrative. Basically, until now, the perspective that most museums are displaying is the perspective of what the atrocity, how it occurred, and the perpetrators that made it happen. So the victims are kind of a means to understanding the perpetrator, and hence the message tends to be never again, or a call to become an activist to address contemporary genocidal issues, whereas the perspective that we're introducing is more a perspective dealing with the victim, and the perpetrator really becomes a means to understanding the victim, in this case, Klal Yisrael, and the Jewish people, and by doing so, What we're focusing on is how did the Jewish communities and the Jewish victims, how did they manage to deal with their experience that was occurring from the beginning of the war through to the end, and it manifests itself in all different types of ways. But as far as the atrocity, of course, that's a part of the story. But more important is to understand that there were Jewish victims, Jewish communities that dealt with the experience of the Holocaust through what they were familiar with, which was clinging to their faith, clinging to their customary ways of dealing with any situation that we dealt with previously in diaspora and Gullis. And that's really the focus of our narrative in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how is that going to manifest itself? It's going to manifest itself. Because we're dealing with the victim, and better to deal, in order to understand the victim, you have to understand a bit about the context of who were these people. You know, the Jewish community didn't just show up in a vacuum, so we will have a section beginning dealing with the kind of pre-war and how these communities developed in Europe. And obviously going through the different stages of the war. And then also we're going to have a section on the DP camps and the rebirth of the Jewish nation after the war, which is a big part of Holocaust history, that when you're focusing on the perpetrator, the war ends at 45. But when you're dealing with the victim, the war, this history of the Holocaust continued for many years after. So that's how it's going to manifest itself in the narrative itself.
Okay, understood. The eventually you're going to be located in Borough Park. Now you're located in an area near Borough Park. Borough Park, when people say Borough Park, and anybody knows anything about Brooklyn, knows that it is a major stronghold of Hasidim. It's a very religious neighborhood. It's also a very great concentration of Holocaust survivors and their their progeny. Was that, Rabbi Shalom Friedman, was that part of the reason in developing the museum because of the indigenous personnel in the indigenous population in Borough Park?
Well, that's definitely a part of it. It's ironic that, as you mentioned, there's a large population of survivors and their descendants living in Brooklyn in Borough Park. And ironically, there is no Holocaust Museum in Brooklyn. Of all the places, we've got Holocaust museums throughout the country. The one place that one doesn't exist is in Brooklyn, which is kind of, in general, the approach that the community has taken to Holocaust, which is changing. But, you know, the community is beginning to embrace Holocaust education and recognizing that it's a part of our history. And the Holocaust was another, perhaps the most catastrophic event in our more recent memory, but definitely another event in our history and diaspora in general. And so the community is embracing Holocaust education and recognizing that it's important. And so therefore, you know, it's a good time to be creating a museum in Borough Park. But we're not going to only be catering to the Orthodox community. We have a tremendous interest from the non-Orthodox and from even the non-Jewish, because at the end of the day, the Holocaust is a watershed event in our recent history, and it's something that everybody's learning about. New York just recently passed legislation to be incorporating Holocaust as part of the standard curriculum in the public schools now, which is not an uncommon thing that's been happening throughout the country. A lot of states are passing that legislation.
Yeah, they just did that in Michigan a month ago, yes.
That's right, exactly. So it's happening across the country, and so therefore we will be a resource for everybody, you know, across the board. But we are presently open and operating out of a temporary premises in Mill Basin, Brooklyn, which is a different part of Brooklyn, where we do have a permanent exhibit. But more than that, besides education, we also house an archive of documents, the largest archive of documents related to Jewish rescue efforts that exists presently. And we also have a large artifacts collection, which is constantly growing. And we're also active both nationally and internationally. The site in Borough Park obviously will be our main site, but we do have other projects that we are running. We will have something in New Jersey. We're going to have an exhibit there by Lakewood. We'll have an exhibit in Jerusalem that's coming. And we're working with other projects internationally as well as more of a consultant basis, helping them to incorporate this part of the history into their exhibits.
Okay. Now, so you mentioned Jerusalem. I wasn't going to bring this up at all, but since you brought it up, Jerusalem has Yad Vashem. What are you going to be adding that Yad Vashem, which is this massive memorial, you can spend the whole day in there, that Yad Vashem doesn't have?
Well, like I said, you know, Yad Vashem is a museum that's dealing with the history of the Holocaust, obviously. Our specialty is dealing with the faith-based experience in the Holocaust, primarily the Orthodox community's experience, which we've been spending a lot of time researching and introducing to the narrative. And so, therefore, we will be working with the Yad Vashem, and we already have discussions with the Yad Vashem and done some things with them, and we will continue to do so. So we're not, it's a complement to what the Yad Vashem is already doing.
Okay, so now, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Shalom Friedman, who is the director of the Ahmed Aish Memorial Museum. It's a Holocaust museum, which is in the process of opening up in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn. Do you have a scheduled grand opening date sometime in the future, Rabbi Friedman?
Within the year, we envision opening our primary facility in Borough Park. Building a museum is not an easy process, and there's always hiccups coming along the way. We have one of the top designers in the country that's actually designing the exhibit for us, and that's the Lehman design team out of Chicago, who worked on the 9/11 museum as an example, and did the Skokie Holocaust Museum. We have top scholars involved in our project. And as this field emerges through research, there's always new things coming up, and we're always considering how we can fit that into the design. And the building itself, building a museum building, is not an easy task, and we're attempting to ensure that we meet the highest standards of museum quality buildings, and that requires a lot of work and thought and time.
Understood. There's an old joke that why did it take Noah 120 years to get the ark built is because he couldn't get the building permits or the inspectors to come in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it hasn't gotten past that stage. But building a museum is not as simple as building a house, and building a house is not simple at all. But imagine, you know, 10 times more so when you're building a museum and housing artifacts that are priceless and documents that are priceless and so on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you talk about this being like based more on faith-based and the faith-based experience. A major, I don't know about, I couldn't put percentages on it. We don't know. I don't know if that information is available, but a formidable amount of the people that entered the camps would have referred to themselves as religious. And when they exited the camps, they gave it all up. So there seems to be like, because they said, if I went through such a thing, there can't be a God. And what can you say to such a person? You really can't say anything to anybody. But
you can't say anything.
I'm sorry.
No, you, of course you can't. You can't respond to that. And this is not a, this is not an attempt to convince people that everyone was believing in God throughout the entire experience of the Holocaust. But that's obviously not our goal here. It's documenting the fact that it did exist. It's documenting the fact that people did. Let me give you an example. In Auschwitz, we've been recently doing research, and the historians have come to the conclusion that in Auschwitz alone, we had close to 1.2 million people killed in Auschwitz. Around, I think it's at least 60% of the victims that went to Auschwitz were coming from Orthodox communities. There's no way to be able to establish exactly how many people were actually Orthodox and were killed in the Holocaust, and that's not our focus. But we can definitely estimate that a good percentage of those who died in Auschwitz alone were coming from Orthodox communities, and hence their experience and how they dealt with it was going to be dealing with it and how they dealt with experiences in general and how they were used to dealing with their challenges throughout life. And that's where we see the whole responsa, you know, thousands of questions and answers that were asked to rabbis and answered to by rabbis during the Holocaust are recorded. And that gives us an insight into how will these people, these Jews, how were they dealing with their experience, which was to deal with it like they dealt with other challenges. Seeking guidance from rabbis, seeking comfort in their faith, seeking comfort in their customs. These were different things that were occurring, and no one is suggesting that everyone was like that, and no one is suggesting that they're passing any judgment on anyone. But it is a part of the history, and it gives us insight into how the Orthodox Jewish community deals with these types of challenges that they're facing throughout their diaspora.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you talked about artifacts. Let's hear about the where does one acquire Holocaust artifacts, and what is a Holocaust artifact, Rabbi Schoenfried?
Okay, well, an artifact is something that is a historical item, something that is comes to a certain era. And we do have people in the field who are actively researching victims and their families and reaching out to them and finding out if there are indeed any artifacts, any items that were there from the Holocaust era that would give us an understanding of a better understanding of the experience of that person during the Holocaust. And then there's also documents that go into the archives. A lot of Orthodox families, interestingly enough, have kept these artifacts and documents within the family, not prepared to give them over to other institutions for whatever reason. But when we reach out to them, they're prepared to give them to us. They feel the importance of it, and they know that we're going to treat them professionally and ensure their safety. So we're out testing on the outlook and reaching out to families in New York, outside of New York, wherever we can. And we are able to identify and authenticate and hence take care of these artifacts and incorporate them into our collections.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fascinating. Could you give us like an example of some artifacts that are like on permanent display?
We have a pair of tefillin that was worn in the Mauthausen concentration camp. We have pages of diary from different diaries, actually. For instance, from Hillel Zeidman, who wrote the Warsaw diaries. We have a uniform that was worn by a victim in four different concentration camps. We have a chuppah that was used after the war to officiate at wedding ceremonies in the DP camps. We have a child's tzitzit that was found in the Budapest ghetto. And I'm just giving some idea of some of the iconic pieces that we have. But we have many, many more. There's all kinds of different artifacts that we have from Shanghai, you know, for instance, a collection. We have a collection of postcards from pre-war Germany that were very anti-Semitic. All kinds of different artifacts, and the list can go on and on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I want to focus on, I've noticed in reading and researching it that there were people who were thinking that there was a part that was missed in your presentation, and that dealing with those people who were not faith-based. So could you comment on that, Rabbi Shalom Friedman?
Well, that's a misconception, because we are working with one of the top historians who has actually created what's become the standard narrative in some of the bigger museums, including the Eichmann Holocaust Memorial Museum. Like, his name is Michael Berenbaum. He's working, Dr. Michael Berenbaum, he's working with us and ensuring that we have displaying the Holocaust narrative that has become the standard in all the museums. And that's obviously dealing with all Jews. The Holocaust wasn't about only Orthodox Jews, it wasn't about non-Orthodox Jews, it was about the Jewish people. Jewish people were ultimately targeted and the victims of the Holocaust. So that's obviously what we're going to be addressing and dealing with. But as I said, we're including into that narrative a piece that has been missing, which is the Orthodox experience, which is a bit of a different experience of how these people viewed what was happening and how they addressed it. So that's what we're including to the narrative. And as I said, we're not exclusive to that narrative.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the resistance movement? There are a lot of people that didn't allow themselves to get taken, and they joined underground forces and became partisans and helped fight against the Nazis.
So that does come up throughout the narrative, and that will be incorporated. And we also have in our archive extensive documentation of different types of resistance that were occurring during the Holocaust, and researchers are availing themselves of that.
Okay, wonderful. That's going to do it just about for now. Could you give us information, contact information, if somebody's decides they want to visit Brooklyn? I'm not exactly sure where Mill Basin actually is. I know where Borough Park is, but I'm not sure where Mill Basin is.
Mill Basin is south Brooklyn. It's really at the tip of Brooklyn. We do have a website which has a brochure that has an overview of who we are and what the UNH Memorial Museum incorporates, including, I wanted to say, the Climate Holocaust Education Center, which is a very active education department within the center. So on our website, www.umanesh.org, will be a brochure describing our center. Also, we can be reached at 718-759-6200, but the phone number is on the website as well. And that's it. People are constantly reaching out to us, and we're more than happy to answer any questions or accommodate anyone that we can.
Mm-hmm. So would you say it's worth it to go out to Mill Basin, or should I wait till it's opened up in Borough Park?
It's definitely, we've already had, this is past, we run a very successful school visits program. Last year we had around 2,500 students come through our doors, and the number's constantly growing. We're more than happy to arrange school visits. We're more than happy to arrange private visits, you know, private tours of the exhibit. We don't have open public hours, but we do arrange appointments for people to come in. And we're more than happy to accommodate. And I do think it's anyone who's gone through it has said that it's been well worth their time, and they walk away, and whether it's inspired or better educated, there's no question that it's well worth the time. And we're more than happy to make that happen for anyone who's interested.
Okay, that's going to do it, Rabbi Shalom Friedman. I want to thank you so much for taking some of your time and educating us, letting us know what's doing, and we'll keep apprised, and we wish you continued success.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I look forward to being in touch.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Shul Fidman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour now for something completely different. This is, Brandon, this is one of those, every once in a while we get a musical artist who puts together a song and we get it, we preview it, and we think this is going to be something. This next song, this is Yaakov Shweki. The song is called We Are a Miracle. And keep your eye on this song, folks. I think this song is going to be something. Let's listen.
We started out as slaves. Made it to the motherland and then came the crusades. It's been so many years crying, so many tears. Don't you know, don't you really know? We are pushed to the ground, through our faith we are found standing strong. The Spanish Inquisition wanted us to bow. But our backs ain't gonna bend, never then and never now. It's been so many years crying, so many tears. Don't you know, don't you really know? We are pushed to the ground, through our faith we are found standing strong. We are a miracle. We from above, we are a miracle. Extermination was the plan when the devil was a man. But the few who carried on leave the millions who are gone. It's been so many years crying, so tears, don't you know, don't you really know? We are pushed to the ground, through our faith we are found standing strong. We are a miracle. We are a miracle. We were chosen with love and embraced from above. A battle on the news, we are the stars as history repeats itself and makes us who we are. Hate is all around us, but we'll be here to sing this song.
Sing this song, sing our song.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Schultonman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I hope you enjoyed that one. And I say keep your eye on it. Next is someone requested a Mickey Katz song. And they requested that, I'm not going to say their name, but they requested that we play Mickey Katz's version of She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain. But I'm not going to. It's a little bit on the bawdy side, if you understand the Yiddish, so we're not, no. So instead, I hope, as a substitute, we're playing here Mickey Katz, Yiddle Mitten Fiddle from 1952.
Hi, Yiddle Mitten Fiddle, hi, Uncle Mitten Bass, komm, spielt a Lidl, hoi, von Mitten Gas. Sie brennt auf Feier, seine Stimme tickt zu Loches. Schockel deine Plätzes und warf's nach Kadoches. Now there is handsome Heuschel, looks like Fernando Lames. His mama runs the mikve, sein Tate is the Shabbos. Except mein Onkel Label. Er stopft, sagt wie ein Chaser. Label, leave the table! Dort sitzt der Mädele und wird mir so nicht laten. Hey, Erzieher Pippig, herrichten Tatens Taten!
You or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Herr Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have time for one more piece. This is brand new. I would say at this point it's probably 72 hours old since its release. The artist is Itzhak Orly, who is a young Israeli man. He's been on the scene maybe 6-7 years. We've played stuff from him before. The brand new Hashem Echad, God is one, and His name is one.
עומד לבד מול אלוקים, זועק ללא מילים את כל מה שבפנים, ליבי מולך הכל גלוי.
Shut up.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Schulfenman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Akev. It is found in chapter 7 of the book of Deuteronomy and following, and continues Moses' soliloquy to the Jewish people prior to his passing. In this week's portion, so they're continuing Moshe's basic rebuke of the Jewish people. In the middle of the portion, there's like a paradigm shift. More so next week, where he starts just enumerating the word Deuteronomy means review. So rather than just in a couple of weeks, last week for sure, and the week before that, there was a review of incidences that happened to the Jews once they left Egypt. And the next week's portion, we talk about a review of what basically accumulates to about 500 of the 613 commandments. In this week's portion, Moses talks about how wonderful the land of Israel is. Now, we know, everybody knows, they'll say, you know, what's Israel? Oh, Israel's the land flowing with milk and honey, which that says it in the Bible. That was in last week's portion. And it's a couple of times through the Bible, the land flowing with milk and honey. In this week's portion, it talks about the produce of the land. And it says it is a land of, let's see if I can do all seven. These are the seven species. It's a land of wheat, barley, grapes, meaning wine, pomegranates, figs, olives, and dates. Those are the seven. Now, we've talked before, and we've mentioned, this is one of the things that I was taught, is that every character in every place in the Bible is an analogy to something within us. And indeed, since the land of Israel is referred to as Eretz HaKodesh, so we are the Holy Land. And if we are the Holy Land, and the Holy Land is filled with wheat, barley, grapes, pomegranates, figs, olives, and dates, so there must be something in our persona as well. Let's analyze the first two, wheat and barley. Wheat is what you make bread out of. People eat wheat. Barley is referred to in the Talmud as animal food. And you look, you see barley bread is really a very low-grade bread. I haven't seen barley bread since I was a kid. It's not great. You know, barley is eaten like in soup, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, your mushroom barley soup is on every kosher restaurant has mushroom barley soup. You know, you go to weddings and they have the soup. What kind of soup? It's mushroom barley. But other than that, so what's the deal over here is the purpose of these two grains is sustenance. And there are working with the two facets of our soul. You have the divine one, which is human, and you have the animal one. These are different personalities. Our animal soul is in the pursuit of animal pleasures, and therefore analogous of barley. And you do have to take care of your animal pursuits. Because if you had no animal pursuits, you wouldn't wake up in the morning. You wouldn't go to, you wouldn't get, eat anything. You know, you wouldn't take care of yourself. You would be a mess. So you need to take care of your animal as well, but you have to take care of your animal because weed is mentioned first, because the divine really is what counts. That's the important part of our persona. We're next followed by wine. Why do people drink wine? People drink wine to be happy. That's what it says in the Talmud. As wine, it says, gladdens the heart. Everything that we do, the business and an adage from the Baal Shem Tov and carried on throughout the Hasidic movement, everything that we do must be permeated with joy. So even the mundane things that we have to engage in, like, for example, eating. Eating is one of those things that can you can do it like a cow, or you could do it like a person. And if I'm eating in order to serve Hashem, if I'm eating it to make the world a better place, then I'm serving God. If I'm serving God, I should be very happy. And my mundane acts, I shouldn't look as being like just animalistic. And for sure, when I'm engaged with prayers and doing mitzvahs and such, this would be probably a good place to plug. Next Sunday, the Jewish Hour and Jewish Ferndale, yours truly, will be representative at the first, maybe annual, Jewish Food Festival down at Eastern Market at stall number 5. We'll have a table there, so come on by. We have all kinds of giveaways that you have to give away. And yours truly, Herschel Finman, will be speaking about utilizing food as a spiritual experience. Turn your daily breakfast into something that makes the world a better place. And that'll be at 3 o'clock. I'm the last speaker. So they told me I don't have to stop until people all leave because no one's going to tell me this. You know, we have to get on with the next one, which is very cool. That's exactly what they said. I asked, how long do I get to talk for? And they said, until people leave. The event is over at 4 o'clock eventually. So it's 11 to 4. They'll have all kinds of cooking demonstrations from various and sundry chefs from the Detroit area. It's all kosher under the supervision of the Council of Orthodox Rabbis. And there'll be, I think, 120 different organizations representative at the food fair. Food justice, food philosophy, all kinds of stuff having to do with food. Lots of vendors that'll be showing that, yes, we too are kosher. And you'll want to do that's Eastern Market next Sunday. And I'll probably plug it again next week. But there's no charge for admission. And I don't know if you have to pay for parking. Who knows what goes on in Detroit with these days with parking, but it's whatever, you know how to do this. And everybody knows where Eastern Market is. Eastern Market is like a landmark. People say, where is it? And you say, well, it's near Eastern Market. So everybody knows. So this is in Eastern Market. So anyway, back to matters at hand. So we've now done wheat, barley, and wine. The next one represents figs, okay? When you talk about figs, okay, I'm looking at my trusty board engineer, Steve. When you think about figs, and you're thinking biblical, okay? What are you thinking about? Figs, biblical.
Those very scratchy fig leaves that Adam and Eve.
Oh, exactly. Adam and Eve, fig leaves. You know, it says that Eve was the mother of all women because when the first thing that happened, she said, I need new clothes. You know, the whole how it goes. What are we talking about over here is, since you're talking figs, so we're talking that they were garments. Our soul has garments, thought, speech, and action. Those also need to be directed. It's not enough that our persona is directed towards the Almighty and the acquisition of the Holy. A person has to do the right thing, say the right thing, and even think the right thing. Ultimately, that's our goal, is that we're just doing the right thing all the time. And that's analogous to the figs. Next one is pomegranates. Pomegranates, it says that even the most negligent of Jews is filled with mitzvahs like a pomegranate is filled with seeds. And indeed, there are over 600 seeds in the average pomegranate. Yes, when I was 12 years old, I counted them because someone said there's 613 seeds in a pomegranate. And the pomegranate I happened to count happened to have 620 seeds. So there, well, let's just say that in every pomegranate, there's more than 600 seeds. And corresponding to all the mitzvahs, that the mitzvahs were given us not to just suppress us, but to show us a path, to give us the tools whereby we make the world a better place. This then leads us to the last two of olive and dates. Olives are a really strange thing, okay? You can't just eat an olive. Every time I see an olive in a fresh olive in a fruit market, I'm just amazed. Is how in the world do they turn the things that we eat, which we call olives, and the olive oil that comes out of things, out of those little green pebble things? Just olives have to be fixed. They have to be worked on. Okay? And the process by which one gets olive oil is by crushing the olive. Dates are mentioned in the Torah, not as dates, but they're mentioned as davash, which means honey. It's very easy to turn dates into honey. Very, very. Date honey it's all over the place. You go in any of the Arab and Chaldean markets, they have this stuff sitting on the shelf, and you can get it in 5-gallon buckets if you want. And it's a staple sweetener throughout the Middle East. And what you have to do is these things need to be prepared, because with the olive oil and the date honey, it's on what's inside. So the Almighty gave us an olive oil. Why do people add oil to food? Why do people add sweetener to food? To make it taste good. Simple as that. The Almighty gave us something as well. He gave us the inner dimension of the Torah. In this case, some people would call it the Kabbalah. I would refer to it as Hasidic philosophy. The esoteric interpretations are not to be shied away from, but rather they're there to enhance the Torah that we have. The Rebbe gave a very famous talk, I think it was 1969, which was later printed in a separate book and translated into a book called The Essence of Chassidus. And there the Rebbe shows that Chassidus isn't adding anything. It's just highlighting and enhancing what we already have. Because the oil's there. We just got to get to it. So now, when it comes to all of these things, and we're into this whole process, which I just enumerated. So then, each and every one of us has therefore come to what we call our promised land. And the great expense that of energy that we use in attaining and sustaining and promulgating the divine conscious within us brings out the depth of our soul, creates a relationship between us and the Torah. And eventually, what we're all hoping for is that we indeed be brought, not figuratively, but literally, to a land flowing with milk and honey. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com. We've been saying it now for pretty close to 20 years. I don't know how long have I had the website's been around, not for 20 years. It predated the show. So the show's been on now for 20 years, and RabbiFinman.com has been on, I want to say, since 2001. And so if you want to get in touch with me, since 2001, the easiest, bestest, quickest way to get in touch with me is to go to my website, RabbiFinman.com, and right on the home page, there's a Contact Us link, and you click on that. You send me an email, it comes right into my inbox, and I get it, and I spend a good part of Sunday afternoon, because since the show is on Sunday, people, for the most part, are listening to it on Sunday. And if they have got a question or a comment, they're usually doing it right then. Because like me, if I'm going to put it off, I'm going to forget totally about it. So I spend a good part of Sunday afternoon answering letters from people like yourself, because I know if I don't get to it by Sunday afternoon, it's going to sit there till probably the following Sunday afternoon. And I don't want that to happen, because then somebody's going to think, Rabbi Finman doesn't love me, and because he's not answering my email. And so I take care of that. What else will you find on rabbifinman.com? The new media player is up on the radio page, not four or five shows that's been on the radio page since 2001. Now, there's archived, accessible to you with one click of one button, over a year's worth of shows on rabbifinman.com. You could binge listen 52 hours of me. Let me know how that goes when you get done. There's also archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story. These are different missives and medias of how I convey Judaism in a hopefully entertaining and educational way. And, of course, the very popular donations page. This is the point of the show where we say, we need your help. We have sponsors. Sponsors do take care of a part of the show. But the majority of the funds needed for this show, which has been on air for 20 years now, has been through the participation of people like yourself. We could not do it without you. So even just a small amount is fine. If you want to give $5, that's fine. But let me make a suggestion. When you make the $5 contribution, it'll ask you, do you want to make this a monthly reoccurring thing? Yes. And then you know what? It happens automatically. You don't have to think about it. And you just made a $60 donation. And you're thinking, but it was only $5 a month. That's two cups of coffee at Starbucks, or one mocha chocolatey, if you think about it in that term. You know, so do you, if you're listening all the way, we're 53 minutes into the show. Did you think it was worth one mocha chocolatey? So, yeah, so do that. If you don't like doing internet giving, I understand, you know, heebie-jeebies every time I enter my credit card online someplace. Drop your contribution in an envelope, too, and send that envelope to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. There was a couple that lived in a shtetl, little village, somewhere in, who knows, in Europe someplace. And they didn't have any kids. They were listening to this rabbi saying that God likes it when you give him things. And they kind of didn't understand what that meant. So they decided, rather than it meant, like as we were talking before, that you have to give spiritually of yourself and your persona, they were listening to this lecture, and they decided that they're going to donate a week, every week, a pound of candles to God. Okay. So what happens is the guy comes Friday morning to synagogue, and when everybody's left, he opens up the ark where the Torah is kept, and he puts there a pound of candles. Now, it is customary for the guy who's taking care, the caretaker of the synagogue, to, on Friday afternoon, to take a look at the Torah to make sure that everything is just right in the Torah. Because if a Torah is missing a letter, if the letter's cracked, you can't use it. So they usually, this person has a quill and some ink and goes over it and darkens letters, this type of stuff. This, he opens up the ark and lo and behold, there's a pound of candles sitting there. He doesn't think anything of it. Well, who puts a pound of candles in the ark? The Torah's going in the ark. This went on for several weeks, and he began after the fourth or fifth week, he kind of like developed a pattern over here. So what did he do? Is he decided he's going to hide in the synagogue, and he's going to watch to see what's doing over there. So the caretaker sees this guy, and he says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "I'm giving a pound of candles to God so that we can have kids." The guy just laughed at him, made him feel really bad. You idiot. So, but the rabbi happened to be walking by, and the rabbi was the Baal Shem Tov. And the Baal Shem Tov chastised the caretaker and said, "What do you care? What he did with a full heart. He really meant it." A year later, they had a kid. I'm not suggesting that you find a synagogue if you want to have a kid and donate a pound of candles every week. That's not the point of the story. But the point is, you have to do it with a full heart, whatever it is. That's the show. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. We want to hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.